I'm concerned at this group, that group, and we have to act on those. And I think the team here in Beaverton is a great team in place. The executives are super, and they've built great teams to work with them. And that takes time. And I hope that those teams will stay in place and continue to perform the services that the citizens want. And I'm a good leader at that. That's the way I function. I don't use the I too much. And I really feel it's important. It's a team, and you have to listen to everybody, talk things through, and do it in a manner that's professional and with an open heart and an open mind.
So much appreciate your concept of teams. And it brings up the concept when you suggested that no matter who wins, you council will kind of get together and any transition will function smoothly. I understand that, and that's generally speaking what I would expect. Yet I can't help but notice that in this race, existing current council members are divided. I think just about 50-50, although it's hard to ordinarily be hard to divide five and get 50-50, but right. Because of a vacancy, et cetera, et cetera. I'm wondering what you think of that division, and regardless as to whether you're successful or your opponent is successful, I'm wondering what makes you so confident that council will be able to come together after separating like this in this race.
This is just one issue. Council has done a great job over the years of getting things done. They set priorities. We work with them, we, the strong mayor and the staff, mm-hmm. and we've got a lot of stuff done as a group. And so that this is just one issue that will be settled and life will go on. And I'm very confident council will do that because they've done it. I don't know what else to how to respond to that, but I have great confidence in council that they'll continue to provide the excellent work. Next year it'll be we'll provide excellent work for the city.
Thank you very much, Denny. Really appreciate you joining us today, and best of luck for November 3rd.
Thanks a lot. We'll see you on the 4th, one way or the other.
Thank you for listening to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. Go to our website, insidewashco.org, to contact us or leave comments on this interview. This series is produced by Rick Paulson.
Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, good day to anybody, everybody listening to Culture in Motion, the twice monthly show aired here on KBOO, as well as Spotify. My co-hosts, Ryan Danley, myself, Mike Crenshaw. Talk to you about the intersection. What up? Intersections between art, music, culture, politics, and activism. And I'll check in with you right quick, Ryan, and then we will introduce our fascinating guest tonight. How's life in post-COVID?
You know, it's more of the same. Just been still unemployed, looking for work, trying to keep it together. You know, garden's coming to an end a little bit. You know, so that was kind of my laid off project, and that's kind of been dying out. And now I'm just trying to get out in the woods and trying to get some clear space, and you know, just keep it going. Had a couple hard times. Articles dropped this week, so that was pretty exciting. Otherwise, that's it. What about you?
Shoot, I got more projects going right now concurrently than I ever have in my career. And so in certain terms, this is where I've been working to get to for 30 years. So it's a bit of an adjustment, definitely a lot of gratitude, but definitely challenging in terms of the way I wound up at this place was by doing everything all the time. And what's apparent is that I'm gonna have to let go of some things to do a couple of things to the best of my ability. So this winter is gonna give me a chance to figure out, you know, what to put on the back burner, man. Very special guest tonight, a young woman by the name of Mars, an MC, an activist, very active during our 100 plus days of protests out here in Portland, Oregon, and I was introduced to Mars at an actual event. And young people in the movement told me when I asked specifically for a black woman that's a dope MC, they said you need to holler at Mars. Welcome to the show, Mars. How are you?
Hi, welcome, guys. Thank you for letting me on here. I'm good. I'm on the same boat with the COVID situation. I'm kind of been forced into creativity mode, like, and then on top of, you know, a big part of making music is, you know, reflecting what's going on around you, and there's a lot going on around us right now. And there's just a lot of emotions to get out, so it kind of forced me to be in creative mode.
Unfortunately, I'm a stand-up comic, so this has been really tough. like I don't have like a whole lot of like I mean, there's like Zoom comedy shows and things like that. There just isn't a lot of option for that creative space. So in here, like I really appreciate y'all for being musicians and still having that, you know,
platform. No, yeah, I know that's the big thing too, like with fall coming up, I'm like, how does touring work? How does, like, because right. to do a virtual show, it's nice, but it doesn't have that same like in-person effect, you know? So it's different. It's like maneuvering differently. Everything's changing. So yeah.
Yeah.
My kids are tired of hearing my jokes.
I'm gonna ask this question to both of you. Do you all find that the darker time of year, in terms of shorter days, longer nights, colder weather, spending more time indoors, do you find that that's actually advantageous for your creative process?
I feel like I work harder like in the wintertime, fall time, because mm-hmm. it's like as it gets darker quicker, I'm like, okay, I don't know, I work better at night. I know a lot of artists have said the same thing, but like in the fall, I'm able to understand like, okay, this is lock-in mode. You know, I'm gonna be working, and then once, you know, summer comes, then I can not really relax, because in life you don't get so relaxed like that, but like, you know what I mean, just kind of like creativity wise I definitely like maneuver like better and like work, I don't know, I have more workflow, more workflow during the like winter fall season than the summertime, for sure.
Okay,
I'm making fun of stuff in my mind all the time, so you know, so it kind of it comes in waves, it's, you know, like depending on, a lot of it's dependent on what going on in the world in general. Like if it's a darker time, sometimes I have to kind of clear some space out of that to build out of that, but otherwise, you know, nah, I'm on constant flow because place is ridiculous, so.
That's
good though. Plenty of inspiration, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No shortage of material. So Mars, how did you get involved with being a hip hop artist, and how long have you been involved in creating hip hop music?
So I, you know how usually like every artist, like, I've been singing since I was a little kid, since I could speak. I didn't really think I was into music like that until my parents started like noticing little things. Like I would just dance all the time. I would sing. I would like learn the lyrics, because when I was younger, my parents like I could use internet on their phones, but like my laptop and stuff didn't have internet. So I'm like 8-9 years old trying to write lyrics down like as they're on the radio, and I'm like, all right, and I'm like, dang, that, like, I missed that lyric, it's okay, I'll just, you know, I'll go over it. And so I kind of learned that way, and then once I got like older, like elementary school age, my parents enrolled me into Meriwether Lewis Elementary, and that's up like near Woodstock area, which is actually where I grew up. And that school like heavily like enforces music and puts music in their curriculum, so I was privileged enough to like have music class and like even after school like music classes, not just 30 minutes in a day, or like even during like we're in like math class, like we would learn all of the curriculum through music. So I had a good opportunity where I grew up around it. And then once I got older, I started playing the clarinet. Don't ask me if I can still play it, because I cannot. but yeah, I started playing instruments like the clarinet, the recorder. I started getting to the violin, but then I didn't like it. And so come middle school, in like fifth grade, I was like, oh, I can sing a little. So I joined choir, and then I didn't really start making music until I was like a freshman, like sophomore in high school. And so, you know, I started making music, but by that time I had already moved into like the numbers, so like Southeast Portland. And so over there, there isn't really much, there wasn't many resources other than choir. So like I would go to my choir class, and like during lunch and stuff, I would just play on the piano because the teacher would just let us come in during lunch. And I would play on the piano and try to make my own chords and my own hooks to like songs that I knew already, but I would like change the hooks essentially to make them my own. And so I started through then. And then after I graduated, you know, I really was like, hey, I'm going to take music seriously and start producing and writing my own music, because I didn't realize, like, even for smaller artists, there's, you know, a platform there. And, you know, you don't have to be Beyonce to, like, be paid and, like, get, you know, like, like, just get, you know, like, your name out there, for lack of a better word. But, yeah, so I was like, hey, you know, so can't curse, but I was like, hey, you know, oh, well, I'm gonna just go to, you know, recording, whatever recording studio's the closest. And at the time, it was my freshman year of college. I had no car, and I was on the bus for like 2 hours a day. So I really had time. And so I was like, you know what? I'm gonna just look for a studio like on my way to school, so I can just stop by the studio, get it done, and then go to school. And so luckily I was able to record my first song at a studio in like Southwest Portland near Beaverton. I recorded my first song with like $250 in my pocket. Like I didn't know the first thing about engineering or anything. And I was like, oh well, like I'm just, however the song comes out. And so my first song titled Reminisce, I dropped it on SoundCloud. And so from there, I just started, this was in 2018. So from there, I just started writing more music, and, you know, getting ready to release more music. And in the wake of everything happening, and with George Floyd's death, I had already written the song All In Due Time, but like I hadn't really went to record it because life is life. And, you know, I just got distracted. And then, you know, I was on my way to the studio the day that I decided to record it. And I had a whole different verse like written out. And then I was like, you know what? Wait a minute. And so that's where the first verse I came up with, Cops Kill Us and Label Us as Killers. And I just started freestyling from then till the end of the verse. And that's how I created All In Due Time. And so from then I've just been performing at like a lot of local like events that are happening here in Portland. Yeah, and that's just how I started out making music. And I'm planning an EP to drop hopefully in November or December, because that would be the 3-year mark of when I made my first song. So, okay. Yeah.
So you've been recording and releasing music for 3 years, and SoundCloud is currently where we can find you before the release of your EP.
Yes.
And if people go to SoundCloud and they type in MARZZ, is there anything else that the listeners need to know to find you on SoundCloud?
No, it'll just be a picture of my All In Due Time. So it's like a blue picture. I should probably get it printed out, but or something. I don't know. But yeah, if you just type in MARZZ, it should pop up.
Right on. So I heard you and saw you perform All In Due Time. It's an amazing song. And it's interesting that you noted that the lyrics that you penned for that first verse were written prior to the murder of George Floyd. So do you find that some of the awareness in your music is not so limited to a time period, maybe even a little bit timeless? Do you consider yourself, you know, that kind of a writer?
I would think so, just because a lot of other timeless writers that you see, if you go back to their music, like it's still relevant today. You know, you see, I mean, I'm a J. Cole stan, so J. Cole is timeless to me, but even Tupac, you know, you see his music, you see Biggie's music, like their music is still relevant to what's happening today. And even if you see like their interviews, the things that they speak on are things that are still either an issue, or like still, they're still an issue, whether they're fixed or not. Like most of them aren't, like, you know, they speak on things that are happening. And so, yeah, I would consider myself timeless, I guess.
That's what's up.
Thank you.
Yeah, I it is like, it's like great to hear timeless musicians, but it's also sometimes it's like, man, it really would be great if this stuff seemed dated. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, for sure.
You know, I was listening to Squeeze the Trigger by Ice-T the other day, and he talks a lot about cops and that, like a lot of his early work, and it's like still like so relevant today. And that album came out in like 1984 or something like that. And it's like, not that everybody here doesn't know that this is the way it's been forever, but it's like people have been talking about this stuff for so long, and it's so, you know, and it's so amazing that nothing's changed. I mean, you listen to like old punk rock records, like Dead Kennedys stuff from like the late 70s, early 80s, and it's still the same problems. It's still the same, like,
yeah,
literally nothing's changed, you know? And
yeah,
it's really gotten glossier, and maybe we may have the internet now, but like, yeah, it's timeless because nobody let anything happen, you know? It's
yeah, crazy. No, for sure. I was watching, I brought up Tupac, obviously, because he's a legend, but like, I was listening to an interview he had with the BET Hip Hop Awards, since they were coming up or whatever. And his interview popped up, I don't remember what year, but it was one of the last, I think it was one of the last interviews he had, but he was just speaking on like police brutality and like how there's division like within, like, you know, like groups and like division within people, you know, us as people. And, you know, a lot of the problems he was bringing up, it was like, it almost felt like a cycle. Like, it felt too relatable, you know? It's like, how am I relating with someone that, you know, like 20, like I'm 21, so like 30, 40 years ago, like that shouldn't be relatable, the problems that they're speaking on and, you know, like the issues that they're bringing up, like how is it? And it's not even relatable, like, oh, you know, this happened, this is like, this happened a couple weeks ago, a couple days ago, you know? And so, yeah,
we're living in a time where there seems to be an acceleration of these things that have been part of a historical continuum in terms of the relationship to power and state power,
yeah,
and oppression and violence, and people's movements for social change. And one of the questions we often ask ourselves is it happening more today? Or is it just that people are filming it more because people have phones and there's more cameras everywhere and the internet makes us more aware of current events? Something that's interesting, you know, I heard that there was another protest that wound up in deadly violence between a protester and a counter-protester in Denver. I think it was yesterday or the day before. And then when I went to research it, I saw yet again another example of what happened here in Portland, where two adult males were arguing. One pulled out the bear spray and sprayed the other person at point blank range. Of course, the person who got sprayed actually had a loaded gun and shot and killed the man.
You know, yeah, that person who got sprayed was a security guard.
Security guard, yeah.
So, Pinkerton security guard protecting some place, and those guys were trying to charge up on it and he dropped him. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, and it's crazy how, like, and that's the positives and the negatives of social media when it comes to the movement, because it's like, yes, on one end, you know, through social media we're A, better informed, two, we're quicker informed, so it's not taking weeks. Because if you see a lot of, like, even now a lot of the newscasters that are coming out aren't really releasing most of the daytime events quickly. It's the nighttime events that they release quickly, you know, because it's that like shock factor, it's that violence, like that feeds into everything. And so at the same time, yes, it's helpful to us, but at the same time, it's like, it's in their hands to twist the story in any way that they want, you know? So even in that instance, the, you know, whoever independent journalist or media person who dropped that story, like no one had even known it was a security guard and they were doing their job, you know? Not to say that it wouldn't be right if it was a person protecting themselves, but you know, it does paint a certain picture, you know? Like, oh, well, you know, this person used deadly force when in reality, if, you know, roles were reversed, it wouldn't be, you know, a problem, but yeah.
One of the things that I'm concerned about is when is the criminalization of demonstrations, you know, nonviolent direct action. I mean, they're already, those things have already been criminalized, protests, but when is it going to be enforced in an even more aggressive manner, the notion that people should not be at these protests because of the resultant violence. You know, when we have multiple incidents now with Kenosha, something happened in Dakota, and that was interesting because the business owner that shot and killed the young Black man there actually killed himself in Oregon. And then you had what happened in Portland, and then you had what happened in retaliation up in Washington and now Denver. So that combined with the people meeting in large groups and escalating COVID numbers, I'm seeing something and I'm anticipating there being even a greater crackdown on protests.
And that's the thing too, like, I always find it like, not to say like surprising, because it's not surprising, but a lot of these daytime events aren't being shut down, but it's like, it's almost like there's a sense of control, like, okay, well, once the sun goes down, like, y'all gotta go, you know? Which is like, I don't know, it's kind of scary, because that's where the, you know, the idea of, you know, being at the Justice Center, most of the days that I had went to the Justice Center, it was peaceful. In the days that I went and it wasn't peaceful, it was clearly not Black people who were destroying property. And B, it's like this sense of like, just attack them until they leave. You know, like it almost feels like we're a menace to them, which great, that's what we want you to be annoyed. We want you, you know, like we want for you to understand that it's not, we're not letting up, you know? But yeah, from what I've noticed, it's just the media has kind of created this, like, if you're out at night, you're a criminal, and that's the, you know what I mean? Like, it's very black and white when it comes to like daytime events and nighttime events, when in reality we're all fighting for the same thing, we're all doing the same thing, but because it's nighttime, you know, a lot of the times, you know, people get tear gassed, they get use of, you know, unlawful force, so it really sucks, for lack of a better word, it sucks.
Yeah. I mean at some point we have to, like, as a society, accept that the news isn't like an information source as much as it's an entertainment source, and that like it's gonna, you know, and some, like, that they're gonna, like, the old adage, like, if it bleeds it leads, you know, like they're gonna sell us the action movie as opposed to because sadly, like, people like having peaceful events and like speeches and stuff like that is just not, like, doesn't sell ad space to suburbanites, which is really what they're looking for, you know? And it's at some point I think we're just all gonna have to accept that that's not the source of you know, where we're gonna get it, because I don't ever see them, like, you know, change that model, you know? It's like,
yeah. And I mean, you see who the news is catered to, a very specific group of people. The news is catered to, like, elder, like people who are older, who, you know, don't have access to cable, people who, like, don't have access to cable, and that's the only, because when you don't have cable, you definitely have the local news channels.
Right.
When you're in, like, out in the middle of nowhere and there's no internet, there's no nothing, you still will have the local news channels. And so when that's all that you're being fed, and you don't really have the access to, you know, do your own like research, or, you know, once you get older, you're like, well, the news is the truth. Like, even me as a younger kid, I was like, well, the news is the news. But as you get older, like obviously I have the internet, I have books, like, or, you know, access to books where I can read and knowledge, like, or, you know, teach myself my own knowledge. And so, yeah, I think things like that are done purposefully to put people in, you know, separate categories.
Speaking of that, you know, Cable Community Radio and this show, Culture in Motion, these, you know, these two entities working in concert, this is one of the places and one of the platforms where you're going to get a perspective that is not mainstream. So I just want to encourage our listeners, if you're not a member of KBOO, we are in our fall membership drive. So go to kboo.fm and you'll be prompted to donate and become a member if you're not. And I encourage you to do that. Mars, you being an independent artist, a hip hop artist, a Black woman that's socially conscious as well as active, your art is a form of media. So I would like to request, if you wouldn't mind, for our listeners, could you share maybe some of your favorite bars from something original that you've written?
Yes, I can. All right. True to myself, like I'm true to my words. Keep track of all my commas, my nouns and my verbs. Look, I've been hot since Biggie vs. Tupac, something like a Lauryn Hill. I penny in two shots to the people who switched up. I wish you good luck. A lot of people fail to reveal. I ain't give two. Keep it real as a gold on my neck, so my chain just as old as it get, but I still dead it.
Man, you're dope.
Thank you.
That's so good.
All the listeners all over the world are clapping right now.
Thank you. I'm doing a virtual bow.
Appreciate you. I appreciate you being an older hip hop fan, right? In terms of, I like a lot of new hip hop, but even though you're a lot younger than a lot of what I grew up on as far as artists, I hear you paying homage to Golden Era. Do you identify with the Golden Era, so to speak, with 90s hip hop and boom bap?
For sure. I kind of was forced into listening to that, like, as a, I mean, I wouldn't say forced because I enjoyed it, but like I was telling you, I didn't have access to internet as a kid, and that has to do both with my, like, my parents just wanting to keep me, you know, quote unquote safe, but also because I wasn't in an area where there was a lot of internet, and so I would just write down lyrics and a lot of what plays on the radio, especially if you really know, like, after like 10 p.m. is when they play like the good songs on the radio. So I used to stay up and be like, they're gonna play the good songs. And occasionally they would like curse a little bit, so I would be like really excited. And so, yeah, I just learned from that. And then once I got older and I got into middle school and had internet and stuff, I like did my own research and I was like, okay, so I like this song by Tupac, let me listen to other songs by Tupac. I like this song by Jay-Z, let me listen to other, you know, projects by Jay-Z. My favorite artist, of course, is Jekyll. So like, a lot of my music and a lot of my bars, I pay a lot of homage to him, and like Jay-Z as well, just because, for people who don't know, J. Cole signed to Jay-Z, you know? And so, yeah, I idolize those two a lot, as well as Lauryn Hill, because she's just the queen of everything. But yeah, I do feel like I was probably born in the wrong era, but it's okay, because I'm changing it now. But yeah.
Things move in a circular fashion, in a straight line. Do you, for the listeners and people who might actually live here in Portland, do you have anything coming up that you know, as far as a time or a date where people might be?
So I'm planning a couple releases, features, towards the end of this month. You'll have to stay tuned on my Instagram. You can follow me at @MarzzXX. On Instagram and Twitter, and I always post like when I'm going to release something, as far as an EP, I'm working towards one around November 11th, because that will be the 3-year mark of my first song that I ever released. So November 11th, I said the date, so I can't back out. So yeah, but yeah, just keep in tune with my social media and I'll always try to post as best as I can. But yeah, I also do Freestyle Fridays. Due to COVID and stuff, I held back a little bit on that, but they will be coming back this week, so stay tuned.
Right on, Mars. Thank you so much for coming to Culture in Motion. Take care.
Thank you. Thank you guys for giving me this opportunity.
Thanks for tuning in, listeners. Ryan, we'll get up, man.
KBOO Portland.
Donate to KBOO. Support KBOO. Give to KBOO now. Help KBOO reach our fall fundraising goal of $80,000. Got some extra funds you can donate right now? Then go to KBOO.fm today and click on the donate button.